Welcome to the Government Contracts Legal Roundup, a podcast focusing on important developments facing government contractors and grant recipients. This podcast is put on by the Jenner and Block Government Contracts Practice Group, and I'm David Robbins, the co-chair of the group, and it's my pleasure to continue to host this podcast. We've got a lot to cover today, so let's jump right in. On the bid protest front, we're going to talk about Piedmont Propulsion Systems LLC versus United States. This is a Court of Federal Claims case where Judge Summers issued an important decision regarding the standard of review applied when assessing the rationality of an agency's decision to limit competition. Here, the court found that the United States Coast Guard failed to rationally justify its decision to restrict competition for overhaul and repair work to companies that were licensed by the original equipment manufacturer, or in common parlance, OEM. The government argued that the protester needed to show that the OEM license requirement was so, quote, plainly unjustified as to lack a rational basis, unquote, replying on particular and peculiar language from a Federal Circuit opinion. The government seemed to argue that the Coast Guard's determination was entitled to even more deference than the court would typically owe under the rational basis standard. Judge Summers rejected the government's heightened standard of review, explaining that, quote, although the court does not believe that applying the government's preferred standard would lead to a different result in this case, the court will not deviate from the normal rational basis standard based on a few words of a concluding sentence pulled from one Federal Circuit opinion, words the circuit has never quoted again, unquote. Applying the proper standard of review to the record, Judge Summers then determined that the OEM license requirement lacked a rational basis and therefore constituted an undue restriction on competition. Contemporaneous exchanges in the record between the Coast Guard and the OEM indicated that the Coast Guard never really understood the license requirement it was imposing, nor why such a license was even necessary to meet the agency's needs. So, as a general rule, agencies have wide discretion to determine their own requirements. But OEM license requirements like this one have inevitably create tension with the Competition and Contracting Act's mandate for full and open competition. Decisions like Piedmont Propulsion are important reminders that the Court of Federal Claims will apply rational basis review with rigor, deference, but not blind deference, that is, when an agency limits competition. Jumping over to claims now, we're dealing with the South Texas Health System as appellant. And this one, the CBCA recently issued a decision reminding contractors that the 6-year statute of limitations for claims under the Contract Disputes Act starts to run upon claim accrual, and settlement negotiations with the government do not toll the statute of limitations. South Texas Health Systems involved a long-running dispute between the contractor and the VA over medical claims. The claims at issue here, submitted February 3, 2020, involve episodes of care that occurred between November 2009 and January 2014. The VA argued that each claim accrued within 72 hours of each episode of care when the VA provided the contractor with the authorization decision that allegedly breached the contract, and therefore these claims were untimely. The CBCA agreed that the CDA's statute of limitations barred all claims based on episodes of care that occurred on or before February 3, 2014, or 6 years before the contractor submitted the complaint. The board further rejected the contractor's contention that even if claims accrued more than 6 years before claim submission, they were all preserved through equitable tolling because it had been continuously negotiating with the government to resolve disputes informally. Notably, the board affirmed the principle that settlement negotiations do not toll the statute of limitations. This case is an important reminder that contractors must be mindful of when a claim accrues and triggers the statute of limitations, and the statute of limitations continues to run even during active settlement negotiations with the government. Okay, moving on to a small business update. Since our last roundup discussing a court decision requiring the SBA to immediately stop using the presumption of social disadvantage to administer the 8A program, the SBA has provided guidance for 8A program participants on how to proceed. Importantly, the SBA is now requiring all 8A participants whose program eligibility is based upon one or more individuals who relied upon the presumption of social disadvantage to establish their individual social disadvantage by completing a social disadvantage narrative. Current 8A participants are encouraged to submit their narratives as soon as possible, but there continues to be some delay in the system as the SBA figures out how to deal with all these new applications and all these new narratives. Let's jump over to the False Claims Act for a moment. And here, Verizon Business Network Services resolved a False Claims Act investigation into its compliance with cybersecurity requirements by paying more than $4 million to the government. Interestingly, though, the press release detailed Verizon's cooperation, noting that, quoting, after learning of the issues, Verizon provided the government with a written self-disclosure, initiated an independent investigation and compliance review of the issues, and provided the government with multiple detailed supplemental written disclosures. Verizon cooperated with the government's investigation of the issues and took prompt and substantial remedial measures, unquote. Now, look, those of us who practice in this False Claims Act arena know that it's important to have evidence of cooperation on the face of a resolution to help with parallel proceedings, like suspension, debarment inquiries, and the like. But it's rare to see quite so much detailed as this. Now, there have been recent trends to further detail how cooperation impacts civil False Claims Act resolutions. And I don't know if that impacted the way this is written here, but this is quite something. And it's an impressive amount of narrative in a press release. I'll be very interested to see going forward how many more press releases contain similar language when contractors do indeed go above and beyond with their cooperation. It's a nice indication that you may actually gain something here, whether it amounts to changes in the dollars you have to pay or just press release text. Well, only time will tell. But it's an interesting, apparent, at least, change to me and something I'll be watching going forward. Let's pivot to investigations and enforcement before we close out. And first, I'm going to toot my own horn just a little bit. And, you know, it's my podcast, so I can do it once in a while, but just keep it infrequent. This is a topic that's near and dear to my heart and one that I've been writing and speaking on for many years. I was quoted extensively by Law 360, Daniel Wilson's story regarding the increased risk of parallel civil and criminal enforcement actions against government contractors. It'll be up on my bio page shortly, if it's not there already, and I'm happy to send a copy to any who'd like to read it, just to get the sense of the current state of parallel proceeding risk. Spoiler alert, it's increasing. We seem to be at a high watermark, at least in recent years, for the risk, and the trend lines are only looking up. So it's something for contractors to be mindful of and proceed with care. What do I mean by that? I mean, the sales pitch in me says hire experienced outside counsel, but let me tell you why that's important. Handling everything in-house, I get it. It makes sense in a lot of cases, but not as many people are skilled in seeing perhaps over the horizon, understanding what other government stakeholders may be looking at a company, how a particular response to an individual inquiry might pique the interest of other enforcement professionals on the government side taking a look. So at a minimum, talk to a skilled practitioner, bounce your ideas off of them, and just make sure the process for responding keeps the temperature low, calms the government, and doesn't inadvertently inflame things, because the risk is at a pretty high watermark currently and probably is only getting more intense going forward. All right, a bit more substantively, the Department of Justice has also been aggressively pursuing criminal prosecutions for sanctions violations. DOJ recently announced its first criminal resolution involving the sale and transport of Iranian oil in violation of U.S. sanctions. The seized 980,000 barrels of Iranian oil in question are now also the subject of a civil forfeiture proceeding in the District of Columbia. Companies should be prepared that this is the start of what is likely to be a significant uptick in sanctions enforcement as part of this Department of Justice initiative. And with that, we'll close this podcast edition. We've covered an awful lot of disparate topics. We hope it's of interest to all of you and will continue to do so going forward. As always, thank you for joining us at the Government Contracts Legal Roundup. If you've got any questions, need any more information about anything here, I can be reached at 202-639-6040 or drobbins, there's two B's in that, drobbins@jenner.com.